Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record, formerly the Paxton Record, for Wednesday, September 11, 2019. We begin our reading today with an article on the front page entitled, Jay's Place Opening This Weekend in Downtown Gibson City. Gibson City. From its 20-foot bar made out of reclaimed fence panels to the high school football jersey hanging on one of its walls, the bar opening this weekend in downtown Gibson City is a tribute to the life of Jay Cavanis. Jay's Place is opening Friday in the long vacant building at 117 North Sangamon Avenue, with a grand opening planned for the following day, the eve of Mr. Cavanis's 37th birthday. "It will be pretty bittersweet," said Mr. Cavanis's sister Kelly Streenbergen, a Fisher who owns and operates the bar with her husband Sam. Mr. Cavanis died almost exactly a year earlier, just 8 days after his 36th birthday. The 2001 graduate of Fisher High School, a former member of the Fisher football team, and Fisher GCMS co-op wrestling program, co-owned the Sammer's Bar 2 at 119 West 8th Street in Gibson City with his sister prior to his untimely death. Sammer's 2 closed at the end of March, after Kelly Steenbergen decided to make one of her brother's wishes come true. "Jay always wanted to get a bigger place," she said. "So we found the building, my husband and I discussed it, and we did it." Months of renovations to the building ensued, with the Steenbergens receiving help from a number of family members and friends. Among the renovations, a wall splitting the building down the middle was torn down to open up the space, and the original hardwood floors were exposed, sanded, and oiled. Pieces of the original tin ceiling were also found, and they were painted in a pewter color and placed on the walls as accents. A galvanized steel ceiling was also installed. A 20-foot bar was also built out of reclaimed fencewood, with black iron pipe used for its foot rails. "Jay loved the old barnwood look," Kelly Steenbergen noted. The bar's decorations serve as a tribute to Mr. Cavanis as well. One wall is the Live Like Jay wall, where his old high school football jersey now hangs. The expectation is that the wall will also eventually be filled with photos of people wearing Live Like Jay t-shirts that were sold following Mr. Cavanis's death. With Mr. Cavanis having had a love for traveling, people who bought the shirts are asked to wear them while posing for photos while on vacations, and those photos can then be brought to the bar to be hung on the wall. Since Mr. Cavanis was an avid Chicago Blackhawks, Chicago Bears, St. Louis Cardinals, and Michigan Wolverines fan, there is sports memorabilia from his favorite teams located throughout the bar as well. Another wall is dedicated to Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School Athletics, featuring flags and other memorabilia. The Steenbergens have long been supporters of GCMS Sports, sponsoring a golf outing annually to benefit the school's athletic programs. Two pool tables, along with internet interactive dartboards, are located in the bar's back room. As early as October, there will also be 5 video gambling machines. The bar serves appetizers and Butch's Pizza, plus a variety of mixed drinks and beers. Eventually, Kelly Steenbergen said she hopes to offer craft beer, including the Live Like Jay Lager being released in October by J.T. Walker's Restaurant and Sports Bar in Mahomet. Mr. Cavanis was very good friends with J.T. Walker, Kelly Steenbergen said, and proceeds from the sale of the craft beer will go to the Live Like Jay Scholarship Fund benefiting GCMS Fisher Co-op Wrestling Program. The employees of Jay's Place might be familiar to some patrons, as some of them worked at Sammer's too. They include bartender Ella Hurgis, bartender Amanda Jordan, bartender and manager Kelsey Steenbergen, and guest bartender Brock Deere, who was Mr. Cavanis's very best friend, according to Kelly Steenbergen. This weekend, the bar will hold a soft opening from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Friday, and a grand opening from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. on Saturday. Its regular hours will be from 11 a.m. to midnight on Mondays through Thursdays and 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. A large crowd is expected in downtown Gibson City on this weekend, and hopefully at Jay's place too, Kelly Steenburgen said, as Nashville recording artist Colt Ford is set to perform on Saturday night on a stage set up by City Hall. There will be $2 cans of domestic beer available for purchase, along with Saturday's grand opening. Also on the front page, prospective pot entrepreneur. There's a lot of smoke to clear. Paxton. A rural Rankin man planning to open a cannabis business in the area said he feels people need to be better educated about the marijuana industry before it becomes a legal reality in Illinois on January 1st. I've already gone to quite a few public hearings and town meetings in different local areas, and the general spearhead I keep running into is that some people have certain knowledge that they've been taught that they believe is correct and up to date, when it is sometimes not, Davian Kane Michael Emling told members of the Paxton Council on Thursday night. To help the situation, Emling said he wants to organize at least one educational seminar / public forum in Paxton, Rankin, or another smaller town in East Central Illinois to address misconceptions about cannabis, as well as any concerns anyone living there may have, including its health risks and potential access to the drug by minors. I want to bring the event to this area because this is the entirety of the area that I want to operate in, Emling told Paxton Alderman. A woman in the audience Thursday agreed that there needs to be some kind of town-wide meeting to address questions and concerns, noting that people don't understand the differences between hemp, CBD, marijuana, THC. She said that until that happens, she doubts Emling will be able to get very far with his plans to open his proposed cannabis dispensary, bakery, and cafe. Emling said he is in the process of feeling out towns in the area about whether they would be receptive to his proposed business locating there. The 30-year-old, who lives on a 6-acre horse farm north of Rankin in Vermilion County, fielded what he termed a healthy mix of both concerns and positive feedback about his business plans during a public hearing in Rankin in August. A number of concerns he has heard so far, meanwhile, seem to be based on inaccurate information. I've just noticed, going to certain meetings here and there, that some facts presented by the public are off, and concerns are maybe less warranted than they need to be. Emling said he feels that with Paxton being centrally located between Rantoul, Gibson City, Rankin, and Gilman, it would make for a good location to at least start the educational process in the rural towns around the area. Emling asked Paxton Alderman to give some thought to the idea of the city helping facilitate an educational event. While Emling said he does not expect to be awarded the required state licenses for his proposed businesses until next summer at the earliest, he wants to bring his plans up for public discussion now instead of later because, as he put it, there's a lot of smoke to clear. I just want to put my name out there as somebody you guys can come to and ask questions if you're concerned about a certain aspect of it, Emling told the alderman. Emling said his business would be something different to offer up to the people, a safe place to try cannabis for medical purposes or just try it for recreational purposes. Emling said he wants to locate his business in this area because he has lived in the area all his life and wants to see its communities benefit from the tax revenue cannabis sales would generate. I've lived up and down this whole area. I want to see this whole area flourish with this new industry, Emling said. A number of area towns, including Paxton and Sibley, have already approved imposing a 3% municipal sales tax on any future recreational marijuana purchases made locally. However, the option remains for those same towns to opt out of allowing cannabis sales if they so choose. Now from the Paxton City Council. Community invited to open house to learn about Paxton's streetscape improvement project. Paxton. The city is inviting business owners, residents, and anyone else interested to attend a public open house regarding the first phase of downtown Paxton's streetscape improvement project. The event is set from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, September 23rd at City Hall, 145 South Market Street. Engineers from the Champaign-based Farnsworth Group, which is overseeing the project, will be in attendance to show renderings of the proposed new streetscape, inform the public about the million-dollar project, and address any questions or concerns. It's kind of one of those speak now or forever hold your peace kind of things, Mayor Bill Ingold said during Tuesday's City Council meeting. The first phase of the project, which is expected to be completed in 2020, will involve the replacement of downtown Market Streets from Orleans to Home Street. It will also involve the construction of new curbs, sidewalks, and streetlights in the 100 block of North Market Street. The city is planning to fund the project's first phase using the $1,140,000 in funds that the city was required to return to the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity following the termination of the city's revolving loan fund. Additional phases of the project, including new curbs, sidewalks, and streetlights in the 100 block of South Market Street, could be completed later once enough funds become available through the annual budgeting or the obtaining of grants, Ingold said. Ingold said he expects construction to begin next May, after final plans are drawn up this fall, and bids are sought from contractors next January and February, and then awarded next March. Also from the City Council, Alderman, J-turns not just illegal in Paxton, but dangerous. Paxton. While drivers have been making so-called J-turns in downtown Paxton for decades, the practice happens to be illegal, plus unsafe, a city council member warned Tuesday. I see it happening a lot, especially at the post office, in front of the local drugstores and some of the restaurants, Alderman Camelin Johnson-Anderson said during Tuesday's council meeting. I'm surprised we don't have very many accidents there, but I just have a concern for the public safety for people not abiding by the law. A J-turn is made when a driver turns left into an angled parking space on the opposite side of the road. Under the city ordinance, it is illegal and punishable by a fine. I think some people just don't know it's illegal. It's not that they're intentionally disobeying the law, Johnson Anderson said. And I think people see it done, so they think they can do it. That's part of it, too. Johnson Anderson said she would like Paxton police to issue warnings to violators to see if that helps correct the situation. Tickets could be issued to repeat offenders, she suggested. Police Chief Coy Cornett said he could have his officers stationed periodically on Market Street downtown to enforce the J-turn ordinance. Alderman Rob Steiger pointed out that, technically, drivers using Market Streets are also not legally allowed to make a left turn across the double yellow line to access Casey's General Store across from City Hall. By law, you shouldn't, Steiger said. It's a double yellow line, and you do not cross a double yellow line. It's in their driver's book. Steiger's assumption, however, may be incorrect. Under both state law and city ordinance, drivers can legally cross a double yellow line to make a left turn, as long as the turn is made into or from an alley, private road, or driveway. Now one of the featured articles. Man who committed murder as teen wants sentence reduced. Paxton. A 37-year-old serving a 60-year prison term for a murder he committed in Ford County when he was 16 is challenging the constitutionality of his sentence and asking it to be reduced to 40 years. Anthony Jennings, convicted of the first-degree murder in 1998 for fatally shooting Craig Little, recently filed a post-conviction relief petition in Ford County Circuit Court that contends his sentence must be reduced in light of a recent Illinois Supreme Court ruling. In April, the Supreme Court upheld an appellate's court decision to vacate a 50-year prison sentence imposed on a 16-year-old boy who killed a 25-year-old woman in Chicago. In reaching its landmark ruling in People v. Buffer, the court concluded that a sentence of more than 40 years in prison imposed on a juvenile offender can be considered a de facto life sentence in violation of the Eighth Amendment. Hence, my sentence of 60 years must be reduced in light of the language in Buffer, making it clear that this new sentencing law is retroactive to those sentenced prior to this new announcement, Jennings wrote in his petition to the court. Jennings appeared Tuesday in Ford County Circuit Court in the custody of the Illinois Department of Corrections. During the hearing, Judge Matt Fitton ruled that Jennings had met the statutory requirements to move to the second stage of the post-conviction relief process. Fitton also appointed an attorney from the Illinois Appellate Public Defender's Office to represent Jennings, and a status hearing was set for November 1st. State's attorney, Andrew Killian, did not immediately respond to messages seeking comment. Currently housed at the Danville Correctional Center, Jennings is projected to be eligible for parole in February 2028 at age 46 after serving 30 years of his 60-year term. If his sentence ends up being reduced to 40 years as requested, Jennings would immediately be eligible for parole. This was the second post-conviction relief petition that Jennings has filed since being sentenced to prison in August 1998 after pleading guilty to first-degree murder. The last one, filed in 2000, alleged that he received ineffective assistance from his court-appointed public defender, whom he claimed ignored his request to file a motion to reconsider his sentence and a notice of appeal. The petition ended up being denied. Besides Jennings, also convicted of first-degree murder in connection with the premeditated killing of Mr. Little, were two adult co-defendants, Mr. Little's estranged wife, Angela Little, and Carl Duringer, her then-boyfriend. The couple arranged for Jennings to kill Mr. Little at his home using a shotgun that Duringer had obtained from his employer. In return for murdering Mr. Little, they agreed to share Mr. Little's life insurance proceeds with Jennings. Angela Little was serving a 56 years in prison, while Duringer received a 50-year prison term. An affidavit filed with his most recent post-conviction relief petition, Jennings said that in his youth, "I was not only involved with the wrong people, I had little parental guidance at home." Jennings said that since being incarcerated, he has acquired his GED, completed 15 credit hours of college courses, and taken advantage of the prison workforce to obtain skills that will help me with gainful employment upon release. Now from Loda. Lutheran Church in Loda celebrating 70 years. Loda. The Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Loda will celebrate its 70th anniversary with a special 10:30 a.m. worship service officiated by the Reverend Earl Kinney on Sunday, October 13th. During the service, many hymns that were sung at past anniversary services will be sung. A special anthem will also be sung by Sherry Janowski and her daughter, Grace Howes, who are both past members of the church. The church's choir will also sing a special anthem. A catered, old-fashioned Sunday chicken dinner will be served as well. The church was formed after the Reverend E. M. Galterman of St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley conducted a survey in Loda in 1948 to determine whether people were interested in starting a mission church. It soon became evident that there was a desire and a need for a Lutheran church in Loda. The first service was conducted on November 7, 1948, at the local funeral home, Kelly Memorial Chapel. There were 63 people in attendance, with the Reverend Galterman leading the service. Over the past 70 years, the church has been served by 25 pastors and vicars, some serving as many as 21 years and others as few as one. Of the original 17 charter members, Gwen Ennen of Paxton is the only one still living. She still worships at the church. Services continued every Sunday evening until February 1949, when members of the disbanded Merriman Congregational Church offered the use of their vacant building for services. The trustees soon made an offer to buy the building, and the offer was accepted. The mission was organized on October 11, 1949, into a congregation named the Emmanuel Evangelical Lutheran Church. The congregation still worships in this building, although many upgrades and improvements have been made over the past 70 years. In addition to the basement being dug, a kitchen and restrooms were installed, and Sunday school rooms, a meeting room, and an office addition were also added. Also, the building is now air-conditioned and has an elevator. The church members have always been very busy in their church and community. For 45 consecutive years, the church hosted a complete turkey dinner open to the public. The first was served in November 1959 and the last in November 2004. At one time, the church was serving 650 meals in a four-hour period, including 450 meals served as family-style sit-down dinner and 200 meals as carry-out. Today, the congregation is small in number but is still worshiping on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with coffee, snacks, and Bible study following the service. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, September 11, 2019. Norma Jean Rohrbach Clover, Danforth. Norma Jean Rohrbach Clover, 87, of Cisna Park, died at 12:09 p.m. Thursday, September 5, 2019, in Danforth. Funeral services were held Monday, September 9, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Ash Grove, with the Reverend Tim Hahn officiating. Burial followed in St. John's Lutheran Cemetery in Ash Grove. Memorials may be given to Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth or St. John's Lutheran Church at Ash Grove. Roscoe H. Mason, Gilman. Roscoe H. Mason, 90, of Gilman, died Monday, September 9, 2019, at the Gilman Healthcare Center. Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Friday, September 13, at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Gilman, with the Reverend Pete Heinrich officiating. Burial followed the service at the Gilman Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the St. Jude Children's Hospital. Lawrence J. Larry Richardson, Rantoul. Lawrence J. Larry Richardson, 67, of Rantoul, died at 7:05 p.m. Tuesday, September 10, 2019, at his home. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 14th, at Bear Funeral Services in Paxton, with Father Joe Phelps officiating. Burial will follow in St. Lawrence Cemetery, Penfield. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, September 13th, at the funeral home, with a rosary at 7 p.m. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Douglas O. Baird, Gibson City. Douglas O. Baird, 66, of Gibson City, died peacefully on Thursday, August 29, 2019, at his home, surrounded by friends and family. A celebration of life service will be at 1 p.m. Sunday, September 22, at the Gibson Bible Church, with the Reverend Paul Thomason officiating. Family will receive friends following the service. In lieu of flowers, memorial tributes may be made to the Future Farmers of America chapter at Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School. Gladys I. Thilmany, Urbana. Gladys I. Thilmany, 78, of Urbana, formerly of Paxton, died peacefully at her home at 7:41 a.m. Tuesday, September 10, 2019. Graveside services will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, September 16th, at Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda, with the Reverend Deborah Dormier officiating. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society or the First Lutheran Church in Paxton. We return to the news with a story from Gibson City. Harvest Fest set for this weekend in downtown. Gibson City. Organizers of Gibson City's 5th annual Harvest Fest are well aware that it might be difficult to attract a large crowd to the city's downtown on the night of Friday, September 13th, when the two-day festival kicks off. After all, that same night, the defending Class 2A state champion Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School Falcons football team is playing on the road at Hayworth, bringing its faithful fan base with them. But those residents who decide to stick around town will be in for a treat. Starting at 4 p.m., Harvest Fest gets underway with family games and activities, a beer tent and food vendors, leading up to a pair of concerts that night. Jake and Jackson from 5 to 7 p.m., and the Fun Pianos interactive dueling piano show from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. "We've got things for everybody to do," said Bill Kirby, president of the board of directors of the Gilman Area Chamber of Commerce, which sponsors the festival each September. "I know there's a high school football that night, but if you don't want to travel on Friday, we've got a lot of family-friendly things to do. Activities specifically geared toward the family." With no football game the following day, a much louder crowd is expected to be on hand for the full day of activities slated for Saturday, September 14th. Saturday's events kick off with a car show at the Bank of Gibson City from 7 to 9 a.m., followed by events downtown getting underway at 11 a.m. There will be a beer tent from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., food vendors from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., retail vendors 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., healthcare-related educational activities provided by the Gibson Area Hospital from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and a kids' zone featuring inflatables, fun-believable balloons, face painting by the zoo lady, mini-golf, a reptile petting zoo, clothespin puppets, and barrel wagon rides from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Four bands will also be performing Saturday on a stage set up beside City Hall: the Fairchilds from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., Counterfeit from 2 to 4 p.m., the Devin Clemens Band at 7:30 p.m., and lastly, Nashville recording artist Colt Ford. The concerts are free to the public. "Evidently, Colt Ford has quite the following," Kirby said, "so we're actually expecting quite a big crowd. We're expecting to bring quite a few people from out of town, especially and specifically for Colt Ford." Other activities on Saturday include an axe-throwing contest at noon to 11 p.m., a bags tournament from 1 to 4 p.m., beer stein holding competition at 8:30 p.m., and the Absurd One-Third Race from 4 to 6 p.m. The second annual Absurd One-Third Race involves participants making a $25 donation to the Shriners Hospitals for Children in return for the opportunity to have a drink, anything they want, from water to beer, at each of three stops in downtown bars. The event begins at the American Legion Post, then proceeds to Jay's Place, then to Burger and Beer. Participants will receive a t-shirt, cup, medal, and sticker. People can sign up and pay at www.gibsonsharvestfest.com under the contest tab. "It's kind of a fun fundraiser for the Shriners," Kirby said. The axe throwing contest is being sponsored by the Gibson City Rotary Club and will involve participants making a $5 donation for 5 attempts at throwing an axe at a target, or an $8 donation for 10 throws. When dusk arrives, the axes will glow in the dark. "I've heard a couple of people say they've done it before, and they say it's a blast," Kirby said. The beer stein holding contest involves participants holding a plastic beer stein filled with beer to see who can hold it the longest without moving their arm. Registration begins at 8 p.m. for two competitions, one involving 25 men and the other 25 women. There is a $20 entry fee per contestant. First place winners receive $50 and an authentic German beer stein. All participants receive a beer mug filled with Sam Adams Oktoberfest beer. The Double Elimination Bags Tourney, sponsored by Heiser Insurance, will award a $500 cash prize to the winning team, along with cash prizes for the runner-up and third-place finishers. Registration begins at 11:30 a.m., and all teams must be registered and pay a $40 registration fee by 12:30 p.m., with play beginning at 1 p.m. People can register at www.gibsoncityharvestfest.com under the contest tab. People can find out more about the festival at their website. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again real soon.